I Hate Politics is a podcast about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. If you haven't looked at your TV lately or at your mail, general elections are around the corner, Tuesday, November 5th. And with elections the last decade or more has come misinformation and disinformation. Not only claims and counterclaims by candidates, but also systematic foreign actor-led attacks. And former President Trump has even made the argument that unless he wins, the election was fraudulent. In the United States, elections are largely administered by states, with the Federal Elections Commission serving as a clearinghouse for campaign information for federal races. This means that there are 50-plus election administrators in the United States who not only help preserve the integrity and security of elections, but now must also counter fake news, deepfakes, and AI-generated false content. This is much bigger in swing states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona. But Deep Blue Maryland is not free of malicious targeting intended to tamper with elections. I spoke with the state's election administrator, Jared DeMaranis, about the fight against fake news being fought by election administrators. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by UMBC's Political Science Program, where you'll learn to shape public policy, impact communities, and function at the center of modern society. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now. Music for this episode comes from the Washington, D.C. rock and roll band Seven Door Sedan. Glenn Kowalski on vocals and guitar, Josh Singer on bass guitar, and Norman Vandersloot on drums. You can find their newest fall 2024 singles on Bandcamp. We use two songs, Neutro and Juniper. Ask me anything, it's all right. I'll tell you I'm neutral. Oh, I'm really, really neutral. Yeah. Jared DeMaranis, welcome to I Hate Politics.
Thank you. I disagree with the name. I love politics and I love elections. That's why I'm here. So I got to convince your listeners not to hate politics, but to engage. So hopefully at the end of this, I'll get more a bump in voter registration and turnout.
That's exactly why we are here. The country is awash in fake election news. What would you say are the most common tropes here in Maryland?
We had a texting scam where, you know, people were receiving text messages saying that they were not registered to vote, you know, to try to sow some distrust in the election administration. That was kind of prevalent for a while there. Overall, there's going to be disinformation about, you know, eligibility status. And, you know, and finally, I think it's going to be about mail-in voting. And I think that's been kind of those have been the three big campaigns for mis and disinformation currently.
Let's talk about the tech scam that actually happened. Can you explain what happened and how you tackled it?
Individuals were getting text messages that basically said they were not registered to vote with a little tiny link that wasn't our link whatsoever. It started in other states, North Carolina and a few others, before reaching the shores of Maryland. We have a mis and disinformation portal available on our website, which brings a community effort in the fight. I can be proactive and I can do as much as I want to, but, you know, overall, it's a drop in the bucket as to what you receive, what your listeners receive, like everyone is different. So they were getting this. And one of the good things is, as the trusted source, they were reporting that information. We were then able to do a press release to tell people to not click on those links, because at best they were trying to steal their identity, and at worst they were trying to disenfranchise voters. And so right now we're cooperating with law enforcement to prosecute those individuals.
What is your misinformation, disinformation reporting website? Can you say that?
Sure. It's available on our front page of our the Maryland State Board of Election website. And right then and there, you can just click and put in all the information. You can remain anonymous. But the key part to things is that you have to give me a copy of the post, the tweet, a copy of the text message that you receive, so that we can then start tracking down the source. We have a gambit of, you know, corrective actions at our disposal. One, we can just go out and work with the social media entity to correct the record, right? Like, hey, like this post is incorrect. And, you know, here's the correct information. Be aware of that. And then they can either work to either remove said post, or they can put a disclaimer underneath it if it's something extremely serious. And, you know, while not occurring right now, but there's always been in the past, like, you know, one party votes on election day, the other party votes the following day. And, you know, these are, you know, I would say disenfranchisement tactics out there. And so, you know, we would then work with the state prosecutor and other law enforcement agencies.
Who exactly are you going to with these complaints saying, hey, this has happened, do something?
Notably is the Office of the State Prosecutor, who is our enforcement agency. But we do work with the FBI a lot to ensure, one, that our, you know, any cyber attacks that occur, you know, we're able to combat those and to mitigate any of those issues immediately. If there's something where that there is fraud or trying to disenfranchise voters, we would be able to work with the FBI, because there are federal elections on the ballot. And, you know, they have jurisdictions on those matters, as well as the Office of the State Prosecutor for state matters.
Okay, so for online scams and things, it's mainly the FBI. But for the other stuff that does not cross state borders, if you will, that goes to the state prosecutor. Because I don't know if the state prosecutor has a cyber crime investigating team. Maybe they do. I don't know.
They're a smallish agency, but and they work collaboration with other law enforcement agencies as well. So they've been fantastic. They've tracked down a lot of robocalls that were designed to I would say disenfranchise voters. So they're a very equipped agency.
You know, once the election's done, it's done, right? You can't undo that, right? You can't redo that. And so timeliness is so, so important in these matters. If investigations take long, or if you're not able to resolve this in a timely fashion, you know, then we are in a really difficult place.
When battling dis and misinformation, it's a two-pronged like kind of attack. There is the collection of the evidence for prosecution. Does take time, right? Because it's not like something that is going on immediately. And then there's my portion of it, which is to combat it immediately and to correct the record, which is to notify, say, the press about the issue of like the texting scam, right? Like try to nip that in the bud as quickly as possible to make the voters aware. So if there is dis or misinformation out there, my job then is to be very proactive to combat it immediately, while at the same time collect as much evidence of it as possible for prosecution later on.
Now, not to put a fine point on it, but government press releases aren't the most appetizing of reads. And, you know, outreach is a considerable problem. People are not even, you know, paying attention sometimes to this barrage of political advertising, let alone your outreach efforts via press releases. What is it that you're doing in order to sort of cut through? I mean, do you have a texting service yourself? Can you counter the text sent by somebody else with the text that you send from the State Board of Elections going, you know, you'll get this, don't go there?
One of the biggest things that I've been trying to do is increase our presence on those platforms, on social media. The spread of disinformation is a lot easier than the correcting of the record. Listen, it's important that you tag me or follow me, because I'm the one that's the trusted source of information. If you have questions or anything like that, like the old saying, seeing is believing. Like, you can't even trust videos now. You can't trust, you know, what is being, you know, 100% reported, because there's so many fake news sites out there that, you know, if you have questions, it's almost incumbent on the voter themselves to take that extra step and to follow up with the trusted source of information. 16 caught us all off guard.
You mean 2016, right?
2016, yes. That was the first year where this and misinformation from foreign outsiders came in and targeted the United States. I think that prior to that, we always felt like we were, you know, it was elections, it was almost above board and everything else. 16 opened our eyes. And it's funny, because I've done many elections overseas. I've gone to North Macedonia, Armenia, Azerbaijan. So, like, and Estonia, like, these countries over there have been dealing with mis and disinformation from Russia for decades, basically since the fall of, you know, the Soviet Union. These countries overseas were able to, you know, have their democracy, you know, grow and continue even with that onslaught. And, you know, the resiliency of those individuals and citizens over there proved that, you know, we can do this as well.
So what lessons will you draw from the experiences of North Macedonia and Azerbaijan and Georgia? I mean, really, that's a very, very good comparative perspective.
Having the portal, making, and me saying, like, listen, I can't do this by myself. It's a collective effort. You know, you have as much stake in this democracy as I do, you know, giving out the ballot and making sure that you're able to vote. You know, you have to come and help me help everyone else with the reporting of information that you see, because we'll correct that record.
Are you seeing anything specific in terms of deepfakes when it comes to Maryland election?
I have not seen it so far, but in this election in 2024 for Maryland is mostly federal. I mean, you have president, U.S. Senate. You don't have many local races.
Okay, so say, now that something happens that is a deep fake pertaining to the Alsobrooks Hogan race, and that gets reported on your website for this purpose, what do you do?
Is it about election rights, results, the processes, you know, right? So that if it's that, I'm going to go to the social media platform, correct the record, even probably talk to them about who received this, you know, and, you know, work with those platforms there.
Which platforms have you worked with? Who are more amenable to your concerns? Which platforms are a little bit more resistant to government intervention like this?
Right. We have the ability to contact them and say, like, yeah, this post here, there's nothing that is accurate about this post. There is, you know, this is completely false. Here's the law. Here's everything. Like, we can cite it to them. And if this continues, like, we're going to have to take legal action.
How do you communicate with them?
Mostly through email. They're very responsive.
Because this is so time sensitive, do you know the human behind the mailbox?
Yes. Yeah, we have contacts. We have direct contact. We have a national organization, which is the National Association of State Election Directors, NASHED. And they always provide us and work with those social media, you know, entities, Meta, X.
Oh, so you have to go through the national organization?
We have a contact that is directly, you know, for Maryland. And, you know, we kind of work as a group.
Facebook and Twitter are the Gen X platforms.
Correct.
how about Discord and Reddit and Slack?
We search some key terms. We're very proactive in this fight. And I'm also proactive also in other languages as well, because dis and misinformation is not just an English-only problem. We have Spanish speakers that are registered voters that use other platforms. We have a significant Chinese and Korean population as well in the state of Maryland. Those communities are very insular, and if it can spread and not be outside of it.
How big is your team?
It's not very big. We use outside vendors to help us with this.
The election cycle has lengthened. The period in which you have to be on guard has also grown, which says that you need a bigger team and you need more resources.
This is just one part of it, cyber, right? When we look at security too, there's also physical security, because Maryland was a targeted state recently for a suspicious package. And, we have to be on call for any physical attacks on our locations. The other part about this was about resources. Is this is a high-tech equipment that is computer, their scanners, they have to be climate controlled with humidity, no dust, no mold, right? All that stuff, as well as being under 24-hour supervision and under secure access. There needs to be upgrades in a lot of our counties going forward, which it would require some money on that front. So that's just getting the buildings physically up and running and everything else. And over 750,000 people now have requested mail-in ballots. 260,000 people have already voted. We're like MacGyver and a chef. This is what you have. Make it work.
I have two questions around that. One is, what are you asking for from the General Assembly to help you as you go forward? And second, what is the relationship between the State Board of Elections and the County Board of Elections such that you're able to divvy up these responsibilities and costs?
So I have a great working relationship with the General Assembly, and I appreciate how much we've had in the past. I appreciate that the General Assembly also wants to keep on expanding the franchise and making new methods of voting available to Marylanders. We've had the mail-in ballot program has really expanded in the last couple of years with the permanent mail-in ballot list. And one of the things now is as we keep on moving forward with the expansion of, trying to get universal registration across the board for Marylanders, that, we always work well with them and provide them with good fiscal notes to help us with it. And I think that they understand the necessities and challenges that we face with limited resources. There's only so much you can do with existing resources without going out of it. And, being honest with them about the assessment of everything has gone a long way to help us get additional staff for it, or that they would support our request for that. So the nice part about Maryland is it's a centralized state. So the State Board of Election dictates the policies and procedures for the counties. And we have a good working relationship with the county boards of elections. One of the things is that since I've taken over as state administrator, and I've said that to them in their conferences many times, that I don't want to have daylight between the local boards of elections and the state boards of elections, that I'm accessible to them, and that a successful election for me is a successful election for them. And when one of them fails, we all fail, so that we're all in this together here. And that cooperation and collaborative efforts between us is going to produce a great results for Marylanders. And I already foresee it from the primary going forward to the general.
There was a misprint in the Montgomery County sample ballot. They had to reprint the whole batch of sample ballots. Why do you think that happened? Where was the failure?
Things like that are going to occur. Like, there's going to be vendor errors. There's going to be this. There's, you know, and in order to instill trust in the process and credibility is to coming out and owning some of that, you know, some of those errors and making sure that the public is aware of it and that we're immediately fixing it, you know, across the board.
Recently, I did an interview with Sam Novy, who is at the Center for Democracy and Civic Engagement at the University of Maryland. And they had done a study that shows that there's been a decrease in the number of 16-year-olds pre-registering to vote. Are you aware of that?
I want to engage 16 and 17-year-olds not only to pre-register, but also to become election judges, because I want to have younger participation as election judges to kind of help fill the gap. So if I have more younger generational people becoming election judges, then I know that that would increase turnout because they'll talk to their friends and increase the turnout. And also, I wanted to talk about that 14 and 15-year-olds can be election pages and work the process as well for school credit.
You did mention that vote by mail was particularly susceptible to fake news. How so?
It's not the traditional method, right? It's not in person. It has always existed. The radical shift basically occurred in 2020 when it went from about 5 to 6% of the electorate and turnout that voted by mail to now the last primary election, nearly 40% voted by mail in Maryland. Everyone thinks that, oh, it's just going to end up in a mailbox. Someone's going to steal my mail and vote the ballot, right? That's not the case. One, we, you know, if you sign up, we tell you the mail is coming. You know, be on the lookout for your ballot. So you get a notice prior to us sending it out to you. So, you know, you now know, okay, either by text or by email. For the individual. That individual then, you know, when they vote their ballot, they have two ways of sending it back. They can send it back through the UPS, U.S. Postal Service, or through our drop boxes. If it goes through the Postal Service, we can track it because with the mail ballot, we have a intelligent barcoding on it. So when you put it into the stream, we can follow it all the way through to when it reaches the processing center, to the mailman, to the local board of elections. When you use the drop boxes, we can then just, we pick it up with, you know, the staff goes out, picks it up, and we process it. Once we've processed it, that we've received it, we notify you that the ballot has been received. So now you can have comfort that one, before we've notified you that it's coming, and then two, we've notified you that we have now are in possession of it. So, you know, it's not going to get lost or anything like that. And then finally, which, you know, we're starting because we start canvassing early because of the number of mail-in ballots, we will notify you when it's actually been canvassed so that you can say, oh, yep, now it's been, you know, it's been counted. So throughout the entire process, the voter knows where it is. Second, on the back end, we know from when we mail it out to you, to your house, to when it gets to a local board, where it is in the mail stream as well, if you use our return mail envelope. So that, I think these are, you know, a lot of things that we work on to ensure the safety of the system so that people can feel confident in it.
The part of vote by mail that I find most problematic is actually web delivery ballots. Now, I understand if you're in the DMZ in Korea, right, that, okay, you do the best that you can. But a widespread use of web delivery that then leads to election officials having to recreate every one of those web delivery ballots, it's kind of insane, to be honest.
Let me just say this, you know, individuals get to choose web delivery ballots. So the other part too is, right, they're not returning it back through the internet. It has to be printed out, mailed, and signed. So there are things now that, you know, when people ask for web delivery ballots, we kind of make sure that, hey, by the way, you need to make sure you have a printer at home, an envelope, and a stamp. Because those are kind of like the things that you need, since we're just going to deliver to you. That ballot, once it comes back to us, has to be transcribed by a bipartisan team.
By hand.
By hand onto a scannable ballot. But, you know, it is a process. It is a little labor intensive, but it's safe, secure, and your vote is going to count.
I do appreciate that take on it. But if there is widespread use of web delivery ballots for people that live in Rockville who could just get the actual one and drop it off, what we are then doing is we are slowing down the counting process and therefore delaying the result. Is that a concern?
My concern is on the duplication teams, but I don't want anybody to feel obligated. If this is how Marylanders want to vote, we'll be accommodating to how they want to vote.
Yeah, I propose that everyone that is in Maryland that does it then be required to volunteer in the duplication team somewhere else.
I would love to have more election judges. So yes, I definitely would need more teams.
I can't let you go without talking about the big issues of distrust. Some of it has to do with money. You've long been involved in election campaign finance reform. Is the state of election campaign reform right now? What steps need to be taken?
I think right now for campaign finance, it's always going to be about disclosure and making sure that you have timely disclosure for information. When you used to have campaigns in the tens of thousands of dollars, right? You know, a couple hundred dollar fine that was personally liable for a treasurer or anything like that, that was doing this on their side. Yeah, they were going, they understood the impact of a $500 fine, that they were like, I'm not going to do that, right? When you have hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars and tens of millions of dollars being spent and the campaign being able to pay the penalties, it's getting almost to the point where, is it going to be, oh, that $1,000 fine is just the cost of doing business and I'd rather be fined than disclose, and then I'll disclose after the election, take the fine as a penalty. I think we have to take a look at raising some of those penalties.
What should it be?
$1,000 fine is not as going to be as significant as it once was when we first proposed it. And should it be raised up to maybe an up to fine or something like that?
Jared DeMarinis, thank you for taking the time. Good luck in the next 4 weeks.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
For several episodes, I have not drawn episode-ending lessons. But we ran a poll recently where 67% of the respondents on Twitter and 75% on Facebook asked to bring the lessons back. So, what lessons should we draw from my conversation with Maryland Elections Administrator Jared DeMarinis? First, it ain't easy. On the one hand, election administrators must inform and recruit the public in their fight against fake news. And at the same time, they must convince the public that elections are secure. That's a tough balancing act under any circumstances. But when combined with the proliferation of online platforms and chat groups to which no official entity can have real-time access, you might say it is an impossible task. How on earth can an election official know what's in your WhatsApp chat? And WhatsApp chats are probably one of the biggest purveyors of misinformation and disinformation worldwide. Historically, election administration offices have been bare bones, adding peak strength in the run-up to Election Day. Most election judges are regular folk with other jobs the rest of the time. But can a historically decentralized, state-based system effectively face up to this massive onslaught? But don't be pessimistic. Jared de Miranis talked briefly about how Estonia, Macedonia, Georgia, and Azerbaijan have repulsed election interference and fake news campaigns launched by Russia. What lessons can American election officials learn from them? This turns the tables on the previous 60 years, when American election officials went country to country telling them how to run their elections. Maybe it is now time to invite election officials from those countries back to the U.S. to advise our elections. Third, a lesson from political science that was not part of the conversation and a perspective that should inspire some confidence about the actual conduct of voting, as opposed to the larger and more diffuse problems of misinformation and disinformation. Election fraud tends to occur in places where the offending side would normally win. Think about it this way. If you have enough capacity and public support to get away with election fraud, you probably have enough support to win at that particular polling place. Counterintuitive, but mildly reassuring, I'd say. That's all for this episode of I Hate Politics, where we aim to stem the decline in local news by working with community voices. Don't forget to tune in to our Tuesday morning news analysis. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer, Adama Gay, with support from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Washington, D.C. Music for this episode comes from Washington, D.C.'s rock and roll band. Music for this episode comes from the Washington, D.C. rock and roll band Seven Door Sedan. Glenn Kowalski on vocals and guitar, Josh Singer on bass guitar, and Norman Vandersluis on drums. You can find their newest Fall 2024 singles on Bandcamp. We use two songs, Neutral and Juniper. Afternoon.